Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Southwest Louisiana Economic Intel Podcast. I am Dan Groff, Director of the Drew Center for Business and Economic Analysis at McNeese State University, Associate Professor of Economics at McNeese, an economist working with the Southwest Louisiana Economic Development Alliance. Today we are joined by Richard Self, Executive Director of the Port of Lake Charles. So, Ricky, he joined the Port of Lake Charles in 2003 and served as the Director of Administration and Finance, overseeing the daily operations of the Finance, Accounting, Risk Management, IT, HR, and administration departments. And then in August of 2017, he began serving as Deputy Executive Director and became Executive Director in June of 2020. Just the perfect time to become executive director with COVID and all the storms. He's a native of Lake Charles, and he holds a Bachelor of Science in Business from McNeese and a Master of Business Administration, MBA, from UNO, and he's also a CPA. So thank you so much for agreeing to be on. We really appreciate it, you know.
Thank you, Dr. Groff. Yeah, really appreciate you having me.
And there's a lot to the Port of Lake Charles, and it's a tremendous economic driver, not just the port, but the ship channel and all the land and everything. So it's great because there's so much to get straight, you know. But first, like, how did you come into this position? You've been with the port for a while, and what can you tell us about your work in general related to the port and the ship channel?
Sure. I began, as you mentioned, in 2003 at the port. My background is actually, I'm a CPA. I worked in public accounting for years, initially in New Orleans. I worked several years there, and then my wife and I moved back to Lake Charles and worked in public accounting for a period, and then went and worked for Global Industries as their corporate accounting manager, doing 10-Ks and 10-Qs, basically their financial reporting for the SEC. And I was approached about an opening at the port and looked into it, and was very excited about that opportunity. Dr. Burkell was one of the ones, and Dennis Stein were really the, I guess, the two people that had reached out to me initially.
Yeah, Daryl was on the board for a long time.
Yeah. And Dennis Stein was the interim port director at the time.
Oh, wow.
And Dennis hired me. I've been there since 2003. It's been a great, I've really enjoyed my time there. It was a great move, and very happy that I did that back in 2003.
You still a CPA, or are you too busy to keep up with the CPE?
No, I keep my CPA.
Nice.
Up with the CPE.
That's
it's excellent. A challenge at times. You know, it's some years I get, you know, how we have to have that 120-hour rolling three-year requirement. Is it 3 years? I think it is. But anyway, regardless, I get it
I can't remember
done.
If it's 80 every 2 years now. Something might
maybe
change.
It is.
I don't know. Yeah,
but I get it done.
That's great. No, that's all, because I know, like, you're so busy with all this other stuff. To keep that up is great. There is so much to the port, right? And when most people think of ports, they think of boats loading up. You know, they might have looked at, you know, Savannah or something with all their containers, or looked at, you know, Port of New Orleans. That's what they think of. But the Lake Charles port has a lot to it. Can you sort of give an overview of all the facets of it, as brief, you know, there's so much, but
sure.
You know, an overview.
You know, the port has been a driving force in the economy of Southwest Louisiana for the last 100 years.
Yeah.
We're approaching our 100-year anniversary. You know, the opening was November of 1926. And so we are approaching our centennial anniversary next year. We actually have Brett Downer, who's working with us to work on a book that talks about that history. In fact, he and I spoke yesterday about some of that activities, and that book will be available to the public.
It's so, yeah, because, I mean, the ship channel has been so huge to Lake Charles, like, going back, you know, centuries, I want to say, right? But, like, the port as an entity is only, like, 100 years.
That's right.
Okay.
And it's migrated from, you know, a very shallow draft port until the 1940s when it was deeper, and it's kind of migrated to the point where it is now, which is 40 feet deep by 400 feet wide. It wasn't always as straight as it is. It was, you know, a curvy Calcasieu River, and now it's the deep draft Calcasieu Ship Channel.
Wow.
Just as a kind of a quick overview on the port, you know, when people like to compare the different ports, the Port of New Orleans, the Port of Baton Rouge, they're landlord ports. They essentially lease out their terminals to terminal operators. The Port of Lake Charles is a little bit different in that we, our most profitable terminal is our bulk terminal one, and we actually operate that terminal. And
explain bulk compared to, like, break bulk or something like that?
That's a good question. The bulk, it would be when you think of loading a ship, you know, if you were loading it with bulk rice, you're literally just filling that the hold of the ship with rice.
No bags or anything. No bags. Just a big pile of rice.
It's not unitized. Mm-hmm. There's no sacks. There's no containers holding that commodity. So at BT1, we load petroleum coke as just one example, which is a byproduct of the refining process from CITGO and Phillips 66. Mm-hmm. So when we load those ships, it's literally conveying into the hold of the ship that dry commodity, and it literally just fills up the hold of the ship, and then we move to the next area of the ship and continue loading it. There's also something called break bulk cargo, which is unitized, say, lumber that comes in a unitized unit, or it could be bagged USDA rice.
I was about to say bagged. Y'all do that, right?
We do USDA. Yeah. We do bagged rice. It doesn't have to be USDA, but bagged rice. We handle a lot of lumber as well. And then there's containers. We don't do containers. We're not a container port.
Right.
But yeah.
Okay. And but also the port does a lot of other stuff too. You do commercial real estate, and you know, what's the difference between the Lake Charles Port and the Port Authority? Because there is a difference, right? Like
there is.
That can there's so much. Like I said, I can get confused.
Yeah, it is very confusing, and you know, when people like currently. The port of Lake Charles is the 10th largest port in the nation. And that is a there's a report that comes out from the Corps of Engineers, which is called Waterborne Commerce. And they look at the total tons moving through the channel. So when you look at the total tons moving through the channel, the port is the 10th largest port in the nation. Interestingly, here in little southwest Louisiana, I mean, the 10th largest, it's amazing. Number 11 is Port of Los Angeles.
Wow.
So when you think about, you would think maybe L.A. or Long Beach are just massive areas, they would be larger, but they're not. When you look at the total tons moving through our port here in southwest Louisiana, we're number 10. And Louisiana itself is very blessed in that we have four of the top 10 ports here in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Anyway, but back to your original question.
Port versus the Port Authority.
Port Authority, very good. We, the port itself is the channel sponsor, for the entire channel.
Okay.
We work with the Corps of Engineers to make sure the channel gets dredged. And as that channel sponsor, they look to the port really as the entity that it works with in that process.
And when you say dredging, you mean taking out all the stuff from the bottom so it remains 40 feet deep, right? So that the boats can actually get in and out?
That's right.
All right. Yeah.
And which is a constant challenge. I mean, they are dredging every year. They dredge one reach of the channel 1 year, and they dredge the next reach of the channel the following year. So that's a constant challenge. So when you talk about the entire channel and being the 10th largest port in the nation, it's including the Lake Charles Harbor and Terminal District and everyone else. The Lake Charles Harbor and Terminal District is really what the port handles, but it also, when you include the 10th largest port and that tonnage, it includes people that are not tenants of the port, like CITGO and Phillips, Venture Global, Westlake Chemical.
So you mentioned Venture Global, like the LNG is included in that?
Yes. Okay. So the LNG is included in the total tonnage for the channel. There are LNG companies that are on port property,
right,
and they are tenants, and they are included in. So, like as one example, the entire channel moves about 64 million tons or 68 million tons right now.
Mm-hmm.
64 million tons. 18 million of those tons are handled at the port,
right,
or its tenants. Like as an example, Cameron LNG is a port tenant. They're moving a vessel every other day, and even more in certain months. On the average, they handle anywhere from 15 to 20 ships a month, which is a massive number. Venture Global is not a Port of Lake Charles tenant, but they are on the channel, so their tonnage is included in that channel count, and that's 64 million. So the port itself again, we handle about 1,000 deep draft vessels. A third of those are LNG.
Okay. And so, like, and now you obviously play a huge role in economic development in the area. Can you kind of talk about the different ways the port supports the local economy?
Sure. You know, we recently completed our economic impact study of the channel, and it's easy to get bogged down in all these, you know, numbers, but I want to put
indirect induced, all that.
Oh,
yeah.
Goodness. Our numbers are 15,000 direct job, channel-dependent direct jobs throughout the channel, $42.7 billion in impacts for Louisiana, $83.4 billion in impacts nationally. And again, I don't want to get bogged down, but it's, you know, if you look at just the average salary, this to me is what is going to speak to everyone. If you look at the average salary of the folks that work along the channel, it's $115,000 per year salary, compared to a state average of only about $55,000.
Right.
And if you think about the multiplier effect of that in terms of people going to restaurants, the disposable income, people, you know, paying taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all ripples throughout the entire economy.
That's right.
And I don't know if people realize the role that you play in terms of land, because, like, Sam's is on your land, right?
It is.
Are the casinos on your land?
The casinos are.
Yeah, so it's like the land is supporting economic growth and development in another way with a whole bunch of different, right? A whole bunch of different. It's not just shipping and exporting. Like, you're supporting businesses and providing land for them, right?
That it is. And I would say our revenues are very diversified in the fact that not only is it diversified among or across cargo types, it's also diversified in terms of, you know, we have the casinos that, and we lease land to them. We get a throughput on the adjusted gaming revenues. We have LNG tenants.
Right.
We get a throughput on the LNG exports for our tenants. So I would say from a commodity perspective, we are diversified, but we're also diversified because we, you know, we touch, you know, we have about 5,000 acres, and we do everything we can to have all those acreages in commerce.
Wow. And even, yeah, so even indirectly, you're supporting other industries that are huge drivers, like gaming and hospitality. It's pretty amazing. Well, I have to ask about two major things. There's no way around them, right? Are you seeing any effects of tariffs, whether they're announced or implemented, the uncertainty, and how is it affecting your entities, if you've seen anything?
We have not seen any effects on the tariffs yet. I think, in my mind, the president is using those as leverage in negotiations with countries for different reasons, and we have not seen the effects of any of the tariffs. And just as an example, 2022 was a record for the Port of Lake Charles in terms of tonnage and revenues. 23 surpassed that, 24 surpassed that, 25, our budget for 2025 surpassed 2024, and we update the board every quarter and update them in terms of what we anticipate our tonnage to be for the port and our revenues to be. And our forecast, too, will be coming out in July, and we will surpass our budget numbers, which, again, the budget was already going to surpass the 2024 actuals.
Mm-hmm.
So from a tonnage perspective and a revenue perspective, we continue to grow, and the tariffs have not had any impact on us so far.
Okay. Fingers crossed. I hope so. Yep. Now, also a huge FID announcement for Woodside. And are they on your property?
They are.
Yes, exactly. And so that was a huge announcement, you know, $17.5 billion. There are other projects looking at FID on Portland, correct?
Correct.
Can you speak to any of those?
Sure.
Without giving away confidential information?
Sure. You know, when we went over a few minutes ago and talked about the economic impact of the port, that was based upon current projects, current exports, tonnage, and cargo that we're handling today.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to the Woodside announcement, we had another $55 billion of proposed projects. After Woodside announced that they're moving forward with their LNG, Louisiana LNG project, which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's $17.5 billion. We still have another $38 billion in proposed projects.
Yeah, it changes all the time. It's a massive number, whatever it is.
So it decreased from 55.5 down to 38, but that's because Woodside announced they're moving forward,
right,
which is great.
It's no longer potential. It's actually announced.
It's happening.
Yeah.
But they are a port tenant, correct. And we also have others, as you asked. We have Lake Charles LNG, which in their fourth quarter earnings call and their first quarter of 2025 earnings call, in both of those, they mentioned that they anticipate making their final investment decision in the fourth quarter of 2025.
Okay.
So I feel confident about it. I mean, I don't have any inside information. I just I feel confident that they're going to move forward based upon what they're saying on their earnings call.
Right.
And there was a press release that came out earlier this week that mentioned that some of their output, some of their capacity, had been sold. So as they continue to sell more and more of their capacity, it just, you know, tends, you tend to believe it's going to move forward as they sell more and more of their capacity.
Okay.
Just as far as other tenants go, Cameron LNG has a phase two project that's fully permitted. That's on port property. And then we have Lake Charles Methanol and Magnolia LNG, which are both on port property. Venture Global is going to be moving forward with their CP2 project. They are not on port property, but their tonnage does affect
the ship channel.
It favorably affects the ship channel. That's right. Mm-hmm. And then Commonwealth LNG is another one. Wow. And it not only affects the, you know, us, even though they're not a port tenant, we're handling a lot of their project cargo.
Mm. Oh, really? Okay.
Significant volumes of project cargo for Venture Global right now.
Okay. Let's see. I want to keep time, but real quick, what's your role in offshore wind, and how do you see that going in the future? That might be better suited toward the end, but I know that there's a lot of talk about offshore wind.
Yeah, you know, there was a big push under the Biden administration for a lot of green energy, and, you know, I've toured some wind offshore wind facilities in Rhode Island. I don't anticipate that they will be moving forward anytime soon. If they do move forward, the port is ideally located in terms of if there's any Gulf of Mexico offshore wind projects, because they did the National Renewable Energy Lab did a study that stated that the prevailing winds south of Vermilion Parish all the way to Brownsville, Texas, were favorable for offshore wind. So if it does ever move forward, we're in an ideal location. Our industrial canal facility is built for handling that kind of heavy commodity or equipment and project cargo. But if it ever goes forward, we're in a great spot. We have no airdraft restrictions at that site. These are really tall units that we would be handling, but I don't anticipate that'll be happening anytime soon.
You still getting the big wind fan blades at the port?
No, there was
I would see those.
Yeah, you know, those were actually smaller than the ones that they anticipate would eventually be installed out in the Gulf. But those were, I guess, replacement for some of the wind turbines that are in the Midwest already.
Okay, and they would come into the port and get shipped out.
That's right.
Yeah, wow. So they were even looking for bigger ones. Wow. Okay.
I don't anticipate any of the wind energy is going to happen anytime soon.
Okay.
Just my opinion.
And I always ask this question, but it might be different for you, actually. But since you became executive director, what has surprised you most about being executive director, the position? And since you've been there so long, there might not have been, but you came at a very unique time, you know?
Yeah. I started in June, and the first hurricane, Hurricane Laura, hit in September, as I recall the date, and it was overwhelming.
Yeah.
But we have an incredible team. Our staff is just outstanding. We worked as a group. You know, we were showing up in shorts and flip flops at the office, trying to work through and navigate that. You know, the damages. We had significant damages at a lot of our facilities. So that was, it was very challenging, but it's been great. I've just enjoyed every aspect. It changes every day. You know, I show up to work thinking I'm going to be working on this and that, and someone else calls, and we have meetings related to some other project, and it's just a dynamic industry.
Right.
The port industry itself is very dynamic.
And because I've heard you giving talks like repairs are underway. You've had to deal with lots of insurance, lots of recovery stuff. But you started in 2003, right?
I did.
How did based on when you were there, even though you were fairly new, how does Katrina compare to Laura?
Well, for
or
us,
Laura
it was,
Delta.
It was for us, and it was really Rita, Hurricane Rita in 2005.
Did I say Katrina? I'm sorry.
That's
Rita.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hurricane Rita for us, at that point in the port's history, was, from a port damage perspective, was the most devastating hurricane that we had experienced. Our damages with Hurricane Rita were, you know, $3 to $4 million in total. That was our claim.
Oh.
We have, from Hurricane Laura, in excess of $150
million
in damages. We lost 4 ship loaders. We actually lost 5. It was three ship loaders and 2 ship unloaders in total. Then we also lost about a third of our linear dock feet of dock space, and then we lost about a third of our, in one project, one third of our covered storage. And with just the 4, 5, and 6 project, was actually that warehouse, those 3 warehouses were absolutely decimated. In addition to all the other damages that, you know, a lot of the damages that occurred were on buildings that were constructed 40 years ago and later. So as we go through and implement and install and complete some of these capital projects that are underway, they are designed to meet, you know, not only the cargoes of a modern day cargo, but also higher, you know, winds and higher, you know, as the strength of the hurricanes, Hurricane Laura was a hurricane, you know, Category 5 hurricane. The newer constructed buildings that we have at City Docks did not have much damage at all.
Right.
Roll up doors were damaged, maybe a small area of the roof was damaged, but overall the structure was not damaged. The older buildings were decimated.
But because the building technologies and stuff have gotten better and more resilient and stronger.
That's right.
So hopefully, if not when, if another hurricane ever comes, they'll be able to stand up better to that. Always saying with. Well, this is an economics podcast, and I always have to ask just to get opinion. I know you're not a professional forecaster or anything, but where do you see the Southwest Louisiana economy heading into the future? You know, where do you see it going? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I think we're on the cusp of a new wave of economic development in Southwest Louisiana. With all of these projects that have been proposed for years, I think they're on the cusp of making favorable investment decisions. Driftwood moving forward with their, or Woodside moving forward with their Louisiana LNG project. I would anticipate that they are the first of many
right.
that will be coming in the near future.
We have been talking about a second wave for years, and it
yeah.
feels like the wave hopefully is coming up finally, you know.
I truly believe that it is. Mm-hmm. I'm very optimistic.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm very bullish on the economy of Southwest Louisiana.
No, that it's always great to be optimistic, and I sure hope so. Well, thank you so much for coming in. And what I really want to, I don't think I got to point out too, that the port is really making Southwest Louisiana not just regional, but it's international. We are a global economy because of the port and the ship channel and everything you do. So thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you more in the future.
Thank you, Dr. Groff. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. This show is presented by the H.C. Drew Center for Business and Economic Analysis at McNeese State University in partnership with the Southwest Louisiana Economic Development Alliance. You can find more information about our regional economy at www.mcneesedrewecon.org.